Chapter 6. The Box in the Closet. It was strange how people didn't talk much about the blackout. Power failures usually aroused lively discussion, with clumps of people collecting on corners and saying to each other, "Where were you when it happened?" and "What's the matter with the electricians? We should kick them out and get new ones," and that sort of thing. This time, it was just the opposite. When Lina went to work the next morning, the street was oddly silent. People walked quickly, their eyes on the ground. Those who did stop to talk spoke in low voices, then hurried on their way. That day, Lina carried the same message 12 times. All the messengers were carrying it. It was simply this, being passed from one person to another. 7 minutes. The power failure had been more than twice as long as any other so far. Fear had settled over the city. Lina felt it like a cold chill. She understood now that Dune had been speaking the truth on assignment day. Ember was in grave danger. The next day, a notice appeared on all the city's kiosks. Town meeting. All citizens are requested to assemble in Harkin Square at 6 p.m. tomorrow to receive important information. Mayor Lemander Cole. What kind of important information, Lina wondered. Good news or bad? She was impatient to hear it. The next day, people streamed into Harkin Square from all four directions, crowding together so close that each person hardly had room to move. Children sat on the shoulders of fathers. Short people tried to push toward the front. Lina spotted Lizzie and called a greeting to her. She saw Vindy Chance, too, who had brought her little brother. Lina had decided to leave Poppy at home with Granny. There was too much danger of losing her in a crowd like this. The town clock began to strike. Six vibrating bongs rang out, and a murmur of anticipation swept through the crowd. People stood on tiptoe, craning to see. The door of the gathering hall opened, and the mayor came out, flanked by two guards. One of the guards handed the mayor a megaphone, and the mayor began to speak. His voice came through the megaphone, both blurry and crackly.
"People of Ember," he said.
He waited. The crowd fell silent, straining to hear.
"People of Ember,"
the mayor said again. He looked from side to side. The light glinted off his bald head. "What did he say?" people whispered urgently. "What did he say? I couldn't hear him." "Slight difficulties," someone said. "Requires great patience from us all."
"But I got it,"
the mayor went on. "What?" came the sharp whisper. "What did he say?" Those near the front passed word back. "Making every effort," they said. "Every effort." "Louder," someone shouted. The mayor's voice blared through the megaphone louder, but even less clear. He said, "We can't hear you," someone else yelled. Lina felt a stirring around her, a muttering. Someone pushed against her back, forcing her forward. "He said we mustn't panic," someone said. "He said panic is the worst possible thing. No reason to panic," he said. On the steps of the gathering hall, the two guards moved a little closer to the mayor. He raised the megaphone and spoke again. He bellowed. "Solutions," the people in front called to the people in back. "Solutions are being found," he said. "What solutions?" called a woman standing near Lina. People elsewhere in the crowd echoed what the woman had said. "What solutions? What solutions? Their cry became a chorus, louder and louder. Again, Lina felt the pressure from behind as people moved forward toward the gathering hall. Jostling arms poked her. Bulky bodies bumped her and crushed her. Her heart began to pound. I have to get out of here, she thought. She started ducking beneath arms and darting into whatever space she could find, making her way toward the rear of the crowd. Noise was rising everywhere. The mayor's voice kept coming in blasts of incomprehensible sound, and the people in the crowd were either shouting angrily or yelping in fear of being squashed. Someone stepped on Lina's foot, and her scarf was half yanked off. For a few seconds, she was afraid she was going to be trampled. But at last, she struggled free and ran up onto the steps of the school. From there, she saw that the two guards were hustling the mayor back through the door of the gathering hall. The crowd roared, and a few people started hurling whatever they could find. Pebbles, garbage, crumpled paper, even their own hats. At the other side of the square, Dune and his father battled their way down Gilly Street. Move fast, his father said. We don't want to be caught up in this crowd. They crossed Broad Street and took the long way home through the narrow lanes behind the school. Father, said Dune as they hurried along. The mayor is a fool, don't you think? For a moment, his father didn't answer. Then he said, He's in a tough spot, son. What would you have him do? Not lie, at least, Dune said. If he really has a solution, he should have told us. He shouldn't pretend he has solutions when he doesn't. Dune's father smiled. That would be a good start, he agreed. It makes me so angry, the way he talks to us, said Dune. Dune's father put a hand on Dune's back and steered him toward the corner. A great many things make you angry lately, he said. For good reason, said Dune. Maybe. The trouble with anger is, it gets hold of you, and then you aren't the master of yourself anymore. Anger is. Dune walked on silently. Inwardly, he groaned. He knew what his father was going to say, and he didn't feel like hearing it. And when anger is the boss, you get... I know, said Dune. Unintended consequences. That's right. Like hitting your father in the ear with a shoe heel? I didn't mean to. That's exactly my point. They walked on down Pibb Street. Dune shoved his hands into the pockets of his jacket and scowled at the sidewalk. Father doesn't even have a temper, he thought. He's as mild as a glass of water. He can't possibly understand.